This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Plato. It used to be, if you wanted to discover something about a painting, where it came from, how old it was, if it really was a Vermeer, you'd examine the surface. Art historians would evaluate a painter's style, analyze individual brushstrokes, and if you wanted to get a really fancy opinion, get really fancy about this, they could put it through an X-ray. But in this age of $100 million art auctions, collectors' money, and museums' reputations on the line, well, that all means that museums and collectors are looking more and more to scientific techniques to unravel an artwork's mysteries. My guests have experimented with what science can tell us about an artwork's history and authenticity. Dr. Greg Smith is a chemist by training. He's also the senior conservation scientist at the Indianapolis Museum of Art. Welcome to Science Friday, Greg.
Thank you, Ira.
You're welcome. Dr. Philippe Collin is an associate professor of physics at Notre Dame. He's been experimenting with what a nuclear accelerator can tell you about a work of art. Welcome, Philippe.
Thank you so much. Great to be here.
You're welcome. Greg, what does a chemist do at an art museum?
Well, me and my staff, we really serve kind of three roles in the museum. We do analysis for our conservation staff so that when they're going to treat an artwork, they have some idea of what the materials are. That way they can choose what to do, the materials and the methods. The second hat we wear is we do what's called technical art history. So we work with our curators and art historians. So we're going to try to answer questions like, when was this made? Has it changed appearance? Is it even a real work of art? And then the third role that we serve in the museum is the research scientist that you would find at an academic institution or an industry. It's just we're focused on artist materials, and we try to determine how they degrade, how better to preserve our cultural heritage.
Mm-hmm. Now, Philippe, he's a chemist, you're a physicist. What can physics bring to art?
Well, what physics allows you to do is really look under the sort of surface. And there are many different techniques. The sort of two techniques that we use here are sort of based on accelerators. And they come from the fact that we're physicists here. We actually do most of the time is nuclear astrophysics. We study stars. But the fantastic thing is we can use those same pieces of equipment to actually study art. The idea is that you use accelerated beams to sort of probe specific elements, specific pigments, and you can get some information that is not obtainable by just looking at
it. So you take the whole painting and you stick it in an accelerator?
So we can actually
accelerator?
Yes, so we can actually take a whole picture, and what we actually do is we don't stick it in the accelerator, we bring the beam out, and the beam will travel a few centimeters, and so we can actually put the picture right at the end of the beam line, and then as the protons will sort of plow through the material will emit X-rays that are typical to the constituents of the various pigments.
So you can tell what the paint is made out of?
Yes, so we can recognize specific elements that a specific paint is made of, because white is white is white, but the constituents and the trace elements that are in there, those are the ones that really give you the information.
Greg, you helped the Cincinnati Museum of Art solve a big mystery about their Van Gogh painting. Tell us about that painting and what the mystery was.
Sure. So this was a project that was more in line of that technical art history, trying to understand what the Van Gogh painting, Undergrowth with Two Figures, what it might have looked like. So we're looking at a painting here. It's a very colorful oil painting on canvas, highly textured, and it's undergrowth with two figures, so it's got a couple walking arm in arm under a canopy of trees, and Van Gogh described this himself in a letter to his brother. He said they were violet trunks of poplars crisscrossing the landscape, perpendicular like columns, and underneath a meadow of flowers, orange, yellow, white, and pink.
And you don't see any pink there, right? That's the problem.
That was the mystery. What was this pink that Van Gogh was talking about? So the painting was being restored at the time. The painting's conservator, Per Nudis, asked us if we could investigate this. He had found, actually, some little tiny traces of pink on the painting, the part that was covered by the rabbit of the frame and therefore was protected by light. So the painting made a two-hour journey from Cincinnati to Indianapolis, and we undertook a study of it.
Tell us about that. How did you figure out what the painting used to look like?
Well, because we had some small samples of the pink, we knew that it had faded to white on the surface. That's why it looks white across there. Those small bits of paint, we could use a technique called laser Raman spectroscopy. This is a molecular spectroscopy, and direct that laser beam at the small bit of pink remnants. And we identified the pigment. It was a geranium lake, which would have been sort of a super modern material in Van Gogh's time. He's painting in 1890, June 1890. This is actually just 5 weeks before he dies of a self-inflicted gunshot wound. So this is one of his last works. And that geranium lake, it uses a dye called eosin. And unfortunately, eosin is incredibly fugitive, and so it fades very rapidly. So that answered the question, what was the pink? The other part of the question was, where was the pink? We know that it was flowers. There are 387 white flowers here. Some of them are white because Van Gogh painted them white, and some of them are white because they were pink and faded. So that's the real tough question, is which ones used to be pink?
And how do you decipher that?
Well, fortunately, eosine, chemically we would describe it as a brominated fluorescein, and that means it has bromine atoms in its structure. And almost no other artist material, and certainly in Van Gogh's time, no material contains bromine that artists were using. So we needed an elemental technique, kind of like what was being described just a moment ago. We don't have an accelerator at the museum. So
shucks.
I know. We're working on it. So instead, we used a conventional technique called X-ray fluorescence spectroscopy. So we're going to, instead of shooting a proton beam, we're just going to irradiate the surface of the painting with a beam of X-rays, and then the elements are going to emit or fluoresce their own X-rays. And so we're looking for that bromine signature, and that would be as good as detecting eosin below the faded surface.
So you flood the whole painting?
Not the whole painting. We actually have a microfocus instrument, so we can go on a 70-micron spot, so a little smaller than the width of your hair. We can analyze selectively the surface of the painting, and it's non-destructive, so we can do this as much as we want.
So you had to hit all those, how many flowers?
387.
387 individual flowers.
60 seconds on each flower. If you do the math, that's 7 hours of straight analysis, but of course we couldn't do that because it takes three times longer just to move the instrument and focus it. So I didn't mention this was going on exhibition, so we had 4 days to undertake the work, so we were moving pretty quickly. But in the end, we did the analysis and found out that a little over a third of the flowers used to be pink. And so now you're looking at a virtual restoration. So we've used Photoshop to take a pink color and apply it back to all of those white flowers, getting you just a step closer to what Van Gogh would have seen when he put down his paintbrush.
Now, no one's going to go back to that original and repaint the pink.
I don't know any conservator at this point that is going to go in and try to inpaint that. I mean, you have to imagine Van Gogh standing at his easel. He's very frenetically painting, mixing all the paints on his palette. Each one of those is sort of an individual thought, an individual movement, and there's a lot of nuance that we can't really engineer into our virtual restoration.
Well, Philippe, if he had one of your nuclear accelerators, could he have done this a lot faster, a lot easier?
I wouldn't say faster, probably, because it still takes the amount of time to actually move everything. It would not necessarily have been easier. What the accelerator brings you in contrast to the XRF technique, which is the technique that he used, is that you get it a lot cleaner in the background, so you can see many, many, many orders of magnitude smaller trace elements in there. And in this case, in the case of the painting, that would not necessarily have shown you a lot. But when you're doing analysis, let's say, of rubies or various metals and things like that, you can find trace elements and actually then trace it back to where those elements came from, specifically in the Louvre, where they actually have an accelerator section.
The Louvre has one in their basement.
The Louvre has one in their basement. It is the only... literally, it is the only museum in the world that actually has one. They actually do this type of work, and they were actually analyzing the eyes of a Parthian goddess and initially thought it was glass, discovered that it was actually rubies. And by looking at the trace elements, because they were using these proton beams, they could actually assign the mine that these rubies were mined in. So that it really is a fascinating technique that can teach you enormous amount of trade routes and things like that.
Interesting. So the Louvre has one of these.
The Louvre does have one of those, yes.
Maybe that's why Mona Lisa has this sly smile on her. She
knows. That's possible, yes.
She knows what's in the basement. Greg, have you ever recovered a forgery by doing this?
We've unmasked forgeries before, and we've studied some forgeries in depth to try and learn the techniques that the forgers use. So one of those at the museum came up recently. It was actually part of a course that we teach with forensic graduate students on detection of fakes and forgeries, and it had to do with another painting in the collection that was purchased back in 1952, supposedly an Alfred Sisley painting. And there it is. We're looking at a painting of a white stucco house. Alfred Sisley, by the way, impressionist painter, so working right along with Renoir and that group. This hung since 1952 in the museum as a Sisley when a couple years ago we had a visiting art historian who had questions about its authenticity. So it came down and then we began a long research project trying to understand if this could in fact be by Sisley. We undertook that in the lab with the graduate students, beginning sort of a crescendo of analysis. We start just looking really carefully at the picture. We then do the radiography, all the imaging techniques, and then eventually we throw our analytical arsenal at it to try and identify every pigment and medium and varnish. And what we're hoping to find, or maybe not hoping to find, what you would like to find in an authentication case is something, a material that's an anachronism that could not have been used by Sisley back in the late 1800s. And what's interesting about this is that everything we found was perfect for Sisley and, of course, is available today as well. And the contribution that we made actually came from one of our simplest instruments, a hand lens. So if you look at the signature, the Sisley, the signature is painted wet on dry, so the painting had already dried, which is not necessarily a deal breaker. But also oil paints, as they age, they shrink and they build up stress, and to relieve the stress, they form a little hairline pattern of cracks. And what was interesting about the signature is the paint of the signature goes down into those cracks and then back out and then down into the cracks and back out, which suggests that it was applied long after the painting had dried and aged. And that was just a little bit suspicious.
So the signature gave it away.
The signature gave it away.
Let's go to the audience. Do we have a question here? Yeah.
So this is a pretty good picture right here. Do you sell the fakes? I mean,
even if it's a forgery, we have a buyer. Do I have 100?
We're not going to sell this anytime soon. It's going to probably live its life for now in storage, awaiting kind of the DNA of the art world, the next technique that would allow us definitively to say that this came from the hand of Alfred Sisley or not. But there are instances of fakes that I worked on a forgery case trying to reverse engineer a forgery. And several people knew that they owned forgeries, but they didn't want to return them for financial compensation. The story behind the forgery made it all the more interesting to them, so it became even more valuable afterwards.
I'm Ira Flatow. This is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. Talking with Greg Smith, Senior Conservation Scientist at the Indianapolis Museum of Art. Philippe Collomb is an Associate Professor of Physics at the University of Notre Dame in South Bend, Indiana. Philippe, do you recommend that museums start getting their own X-ray?
Absolutely. although it might lead to a lot of surprises. The problem is that there are a lot of fakes out there. I mean, they're definitely beautiful works of art, but there are a lot of fakes out there, and a lot of museums might be losing a lot of their value, their intrinsic value, because it is in their artwork. But the forgers are getting better and better, and there are a lot of forgeries out there. They've always been done. I mean, if you look at the Shroud of Turin, that was probably could very well have been a forgery in its time. So I know, here at Notre Dame, that is. But it is a fascinating subject, but it is something where you need better and better and more sensitive right. techniques.
Well, with you doing all the scientific research and you working with the physics part of this, are you going to put plain old historians, art historians, out of work by using science?
Science brings a piece of the picture, but very often we're only looking or analyzing a very small piece. The art historian will give you the provenance of the piece, will tell you, has there been some restoration? Sometimes you'll be looking or studying a specific point on a work of art, and you might discover that that is more recent. It's the art historian who can tell you, well, yes, there was a restoration of that piece in a specific time. So everybody sort of brings a piece of the puzzle together, and I think it's ultimately when you see the full picture that you can decide if something is a fake or not. The art historian is just as important as the chemist and the physicist. Everybody brings a piece to the of the puzzle.
Mm-hmm. Well, gentlemen, we've run out of time. This is quite fascinating. I want to thank you for taking time to be with us today. Greg Smith, Senior Conservation Scientist at the Indianapolis Museum of Art in Indianapolis, Indiana. Philippe Collomb is an Associate Professor of Physics at the University of Notre Dame right here in South Bend. Thank you both for joining us today. Thank you.